basically, I recognized that rejection is going to be part of my journey as a creative, as a business owner. And I wanted to get comfortable with that and get used to the idea, like, I guess, reframe it in my head that actually this is something that maybe I should actively pursue instead of something that I should be afraid of.
Hello and welcome to the Audience Growth Podcast. I'm your host, Nikki Hutchison, and I'm delighted you're here. Now, before we dive into today's episode with my fabulous guest, I need to tell you about something new we've launched. Our free quiz, the Marketing Powerhouse Quiz, is live! Finally! It's not an exaggeration to say that this has been on my to-do list for years. We've redesigned it a few times and are finally happy with this version, and gathering hundreds of responses already. If you head to www.nikkihutchison.com/quiz, the www is important, it won't work without that, then you'll be able to answer the questions that we need in order to generate your personalized marketing report. It takes less than 3 minutes to complete, and you'll be able to use the resulting report to supercharge your business growth. So what are you waiting for? Head over to www.nikkihutchison.com/quiz and get started now. Back to today's episode, and I'm chatting to Liz Mosley. Liz is a graphic designer, fellow Adobe Express Global Ambassador, and host of her own podcast, Building Your Brand. Liz has been on a mission this year to get to 100 rejections. Yes, you heard that right. I don't know about you, but I definitely want to hear more about this mission that Liz is on. Liz, welcome to the podcast. I can't wait to hear more about this.
Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to chatting to you about it.
Excellent. So let's get straight in. Rejection. I want to hear more about this mission that you're on.
Well, it all started because I asked a quite high profile person to be a guest on my podcast, and they basically said, no, my podcast wasn't big enough. And well, it was quite interesting processing my emotions after that. I mean, that was not a big rejection, right? That's pretty minor. But I felt really embarrassed for asking. I think I felt a bit of shame, you know, like, oh, like there was like a sinking feeling in my stomach when the message came back. And I had all these sort of like really extreme reactions to it. And over the sort of weeks after that, I was kind of mulling it over. And I was like, it's not even a big deal. Like, why am I letting it affect me so much? And so then I realized that often we just make these rejections into such a big thing. And often, like, I know for me personally, I make them tell a story about me that isn't actually true, usually. I mean, I think sometimes there's things that we can take on board.
Okay.
But most of the time, it's me, you know, going way over the top and being like, oh, my podcast isn't good enough. Oh, I'm not good enough. Oh, you know, they think this about me. You know, just filling in all the gaps with absolute nonsense. And so basically, I recognized that rejection is going to be part of my journey as a creative, as a business owner. And I wanted to get comfortable with that and get used to the idea, like, I guess, reframe it in my head that actually this is something that maybe I should actively pursue instead of something that I should be afraid of. I absolutely love gamifying anything that I can in my business.
Okay.
So I'm always up for setting myself a challenge. So I was like, okay, a friend of mine had actually done this quite a few years previously. She titled it much nicer than I did. And she, I think to soften it for herself, she was like, I'm going to collect no thank yous. She made it very polite.
That is very British, isn't it?
I know, very British. Whereas I was like, okay, I'm going to try and collect 100 rejections. And what was amazing about it is that immediately my mindset shifted and it just became so much more fun. And I was like, okay, if I get rejected, I'd basically create myself a win-win scenario, because if they said yes, then great. And obviously that was my ultimate goal. I wanted them to say yes. But if they said no, then it just took me one step closer to my goal of getting 100 rejections. And I guess sort of a bit of exposure therapy, you know, really like analyzing how I felt, why did I feel that way, you know, being a bit more aware of what those sort of like, I guess, chimp brain, I think people often call it, those chimp brain emotions were. So that's kind of how it all started.
I have so many questions about this, but I know we're going to get into what's happened along the way. Mm-hmm. But in terms of a rejection, what are the guardrails of your challenge? What constitutes a rejection?
So I made very clear from the beginning that I was only seeking rejections in a professional sense. So there are a lot of people on TikTok who do this challenge to make content where they basically like go around and ask people in the street to like sing with them or give them £10 or, you know, like just random stuff. So I wasn't doing that. It was definitely like from a professional capacity. It was like, how can I be less afraid of asking for the things that I want? And like the rejection could be anything really. You know, it could have been anything from asking someone to be a guest on my podcast and them saying no. I mean, a lot of them were actually podcast related because that's one of the areas that I really want to push forward in my business. So it was lots of asking guests to be on the podcast, lots of looking for sponsors, lots of pitching to speak at events. I entered some awards. I did some pitches for different types of work, pitched to like host an event. So all kinds of different things.
In terms of any rejections that did come through, immediately I'm trying to put myself in your shoes and think, okay, obviously you've talked about the guest who didn't think your podcast was big enough, that stung a bit. But were there any that felt like a relief and it kind of made you realize, actually, maybe I didn't want that in the first place?
Yeah, I think so. Maybe not so much a relief. There was one particularly bad one that happened quite early on. Again, someone that I pitched to be a guest on the podcast. I won't say who it is, but it's someone who's really high profile. And so I was a bit clickbaity with it because I was like, well, bare minimum, I really want him to open the email. Like, how am I going to get him to open the email, right? And so I decided in that pitch that I would actually talk about the challenge. That wasn't generally my strategy going forward. I was not really mentioning it, but I thought, oh, he might find this interesting. I'm going to tell him about the challenge and how if he says no, you know, it's fine because like it helps me on my journey or whatever. Anyway, he hated the idea and he sent me quite like a rude reply. And he was like, I think you're going about this all wrong.
Oh, wow.
And then sent me a link to a blog post that he'd written about seeking rejection. Anyway, I think it was like a bit of miscommunication because I don't think he really understood why I was doing it. That was a hard one because it was someone that I guess, most people would like look up to. And to have him say, like, I don't think what you're doing is a good idea, I found it really hard not to take that really personally.
Yeah.
And then question what I was doing and be like, oh, should I keep doing this? But what was really interesting and nice to see is that I recovered. So normally that sort of thing would send me into a spiral of self-doubt and probably could have lasted like a week or something.
Okay.
But actually, I felt really like, oh, for like 2 hours and then managed to like pull myself out of it. And I was like, oh, okay. You know, like he wasn't the right fit for this. And that's fine, and move on. And so then I was like, even just that, how I responded felt like growth yeah. and felt like things had got better. On the most part, like a lot of the rejections are very polite and nice. And also often they're just people not replying. So those are actually a lot easier to deal with. And the other thing was, I had lots of messages from people because I haven't like massively documented the process, but I have talked about it quite a bit online. And even though this guy didn't think it was a good idea, lots of people were messaging me saying, you know, that they thought it was a great thing to do and that they were inspired by it. And one of the things that has happened that I didn't even think about, but has been such a nice sort of byproduct of it, is that I've had so many messages from people being like, oh, hearing you talk about your rejection challenge, I decided to pitch for XYZ and they said yes. And now I'm doing this amazing thing.
Wow.
So that was really cool because this was like a purely like selfish kind of like, this is just something I'm doing for
just
me.
It's a personal thing. Yeah.
I'll mention it because it like is quite good for content. Everything is content, all that jazz. But that was so nice. And then I was like, it was having like a positive impact on other people as well. And so then I was like, well, it doesn't matter if someone doesn't like it, that's fine. For me, it's working really well. And it happens to be helping some other people out as well. So yeah, that's kind of what the rejections have been like.
That's amazing. And in terms of your own fear of rejection, you said that that tricky one where the guy thought it was a terrible idea, that was quite early on. But even so, you managed to recover from that really quickly. How would you rate your fear of rejection before the challenge, during the challenge, and is it changing? Is it evolving even now?
Yeah, I'd say it's evolving even now. Like, I don't think that I'm ever going to eradicate my fear of rejection. I think what I'm looking to do is get comfortable with it. So, you know, I probably still have negative feelings if I get rejected because I'm like human. But I think it's what I then do with that afterwards. And so I definitely have seen a change A, in the fact that I'm much more willing to go for things that I would have talked myself out of in the past, because I'm kind of like, well, what have I got to lose? I think one of the things that we get stuck thinking is that if you ask for something or pitch for something, that's your only opportunity to do it. And if they say no, that's the door closed. And I don't know if you've come across Kyle, but I actually interviewed Kyle Webster on my podcast, who is an illustrator. And he told some brilliant stories where he like pitched for things, you know, like he went back like 3 or 4 times and then got the thing that he wanted. And that actually hearing him tell that story just really helped me get out of this idea that once I've asked, I can never ask again. And so I think, yeah, like on so many fronts, it's changed how I think about it. So I think I'm better at asking for the thing that I want and talking myself out of the, oh, well, they're going to say no, so what's the point? And then I'm also, when a rejection inevitably does come through, I am handling that better. And I still have to catch myself. My still like natural reaction is to go into, oh, well, they must think this about me. This must mean this, you know, blah, blah, blah. But now I'm much quicker at like sort of nipping that in the bud and being like, oh no, that's fine. You know, that obviously wasn't for me. That's totally fine. What's the next thing I can move on to? So one of the things that I did that was quite helpful, I know you're good at this because you've talked about it on your stories, but I'm not very good at like documenting sort of the stats in my business. You know, like I'm sure you did some stories where it was like, these are the monthly things that I check in on, you know, to see the growth and everything. But one thing that I did do was I created a Google Sheets and I documented all of the rejections so that I could keep track of what I'd done, whether I'd had a yes or a no or whatever. And one of the things that I put in there was like notes for follow-up. So, you know, like, so if I haven't heard from them by this time, I'll drop them another email and ask again. That hasn't massively had a big impact, mainly because a lot of the things were, you know, like pitching for guests and stuff. But like, for example, I pitched to a company for sponsorship and they were like, oh, actually, this is something we've been thinking about, but we're just not set up for it yet. Get back in touch in a few months. So like, I've made a no, I've set a reminder.
Brilliant.
You know, like I'm in a good position. You know, the lines of the communication are open now and I'm in a good position to follow that up. So it wasn't like a total rejection. It was like a not now, but maybe in the future. So I feel like there's a few things like that where, but yeah, I think the follow-up one, I've definitely not been a follower-upper in the past, but now this is just making me realize that that is really important.
Yeah, it's really powerful. So let's talk about the challenge itself. Has it been a success? And how would you judge success?
So that is such an interesting one. It's been a total failure in that I haven't reached 100 rejections. So what happened was a lot more people said yes than I expected to, which was amazing. And ultimately, that was my goal, because obviously I wanted people to say yes. And so in that sense, it's been a huge success. Like some really cool things have happened off the back of it. The other thing that I hadn't really anticipated was that if you're like pitching for things quite a lot and people say yes, then you actually have to do the thing that you pitched for. And so I had to really slow down on my pitching because I just didn't have the capacity to do more stuff. So I failed.
So you failed at your challenge because you failed at your challenge, basically.
Yeah. But what I've decided is that I'm just going to keep going. I'm just going to keep going and I'm going to keep logging them. I'll go till I get to 100 and then I'll keep going after that, because actually it's just a mindset shift for me. Another interesting thing that happened that I didn't expect, and I am not woo in the slightest.
Good, me neither.
I'm like the least woo person that you've ever met. For example, I made a list of podcasts that I wanted to pitch to be on. And when I started like doing the challenge and pitching to the people, I actually had some of them get in touch with me independently, being like, oh, will you be on my podcast? And I was like, no, you're not allowed to ask me. I was going to pitch to you. I was like, you're ruining it. But sometimes I think that there is something in just being more visible. I think it's that, isn't it? It's like being more visible, being more confident about what you're doing, wanting to chat to people that, you know, potentially they were seeing me on other podcasts, you know, stuff like that. And so that had a knock-on effect. And so I thought that was quite interesting because, again, that wasn't really something that I'd anticipated. So then, yeah, I was like, oh, well, I'm going to have to cross you off my list of people to pitch to you now because you asked me.
That's great. So you've been really intentional. And like you say, as a result, people have started to see you more out there and you have created more opportunities for yourself by seeking rejection?
I think so. Yeah, definitely. And it's actually just been really fun. You know, like I've had great conversations with people, great questions from people about it. Like I ended up getting my dream podcast sponsor. Today, I'm going to be interviewing my most high profile guest for the podcast. I'm going to be so starstruck. It's going to be amazing. But yeah, so like stuff like that, that I had been putting off because I was like, oh, well, my podcast just isn't big enough. That guy told me it wasn't big enough, so I'm not going to ask.
Well done for keeping going despite him in the early days, because that could have thrown you, right?
Yeah, no, totally. Yeah.
And in terms of your stats, are you able to share with us how many requests you've made and how many yeses and nos that you've had so far?
Yeah. So, well, I'm kind of embarrassed to share the numbers because I didn't get us anywhere near 100. So I think I pitched for about 30 things so far, and then I had to slow down because it got busy.
Yeah.
And then my sort of success rate has been about 50-50 for quite a while.
Okay.
But I've basically got the longest list of things to keep pitching for, so I'm just going to keep working on it. I'd love to get to, I've pitched for 100 things, so that'll be my first goal. And then I want to get to the 100 rejections. So I've got those goals to work on. But yeah, I mean, it does take time. That's the other thing that I've learned is like, most of the time, I didn't want to just fire out a sloppy pitch. I wanted to really work on it. And so, yeah, that takes time. But what's been another good thing about it is I feel like I've improved in that as well, like how I pitch for things. And then there have been instances where I've just gone for it. So for example, say someone that I wanted to be on the guest on the podcast, I interact with their Instagram stories and they reply and say, oh, thanks, Liz. That means that if I DM them, it's going to show up quicker for them. You know, like it's not going to go in this kind of like unknown pile.
Their others folder, yeah.
So sometimes I'll just like think, okay, I'm just going to go for it. And I'll just message them and be like, oh, hey, actually, I've been wanting to ask you this for a while. Would you be a guest on the podcast? And so I won't do this like really slick pitch. I'll just go for it and see what happens. So I think there's like a case for both sides, depending on the situation and if you have some sort of relationship with a person first.
And by the sounds of it, you do all of your own pitching. You don't have anyone helping you to do that outreach. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, exactly. Which is why I think it's been a lot slower. But at the same time, as someone with a podcast who gets pitched a lot, I do much prefer the personal pitches. I get a lot of pitches from companies pitching on the behalf of other people.
Yeah.
And I just don't love those ones.
I always say no. I actually say no to anybody who pitches. I just say...
Oh, do you? Interesting.
Like, straight up, I don't accept pitches for the podcast.
Yeah.
So it was good you didn't ask me because I would have had to break my rule.
Yeah, true. Or you would just be like, nah, sorry, Liz, you ruined it now by asking me. I should probably do that. I have had a couple of good pitches, to be fair. Out of hundreds, I've had a couple that I've said yes to. But this is the other problem that I've got, right, is that I love doing my podcast. I don't know if you find this. I can't stop myself from asking people to be guests on it. But now I'm booked up with guests until the end of the year. So it's like nearly the beginning of September. So I had to stop asking people because I can't be like, oh, will you be a guest on my podcast in mid-2024? Because they'd be like, no thanks.
So you just got this ever-growing list of people that you want to approach. Yeah,
absolutely. And that's why I say no to a lot of the pitches, because actually I've got so many people that I want to... Don't worry, you're on the list.
Oh, yay.
So many people that I want to talk to. So I kind of got to work through those. So, yeah.
And so let's talk about your business, because I know you've obviously been sending out podcast pitches, but you've also presumably been pitching for actual business as well. And how has that gone?
Yeah, a little bit. Less so, actually, for business.
Okay.
Mainly because I haven't really been looking for clients at the moment. So, well, I was thinking about this the other day. I have really intentionally diversified my income streams over the last 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, I'm a lot more selective. I think, about what clients I take on and don't tend to have to look for clients. I mean, mainly because I'm not trying to work with like loads and loads of them. I tend to have like a steady trickle. There was like a couple of projects that came up where I was like, yeah, that sounds amazing. I'm going to go for that. And I would pitch for it. And I'd say, yeah, that was like mixed results. Like some of them, like often when people are looking for a branding designer as well, they'll get like quotes and pitches from a few different people. So I think a couple of them I was successful on, a couple of them I wasn't successful on. But yeah, the branding projects was less sort of a part of it. One thing that I do really want to do is on my Instagram, I have been doing a patterns challenge where every week I design a different pattern and I really enjoy that. And so I really want to explore licensing my patterns. So I've got a list of companies I want to approach to see if they would like to license my patterns. Mm. But again, that is, it's like the taking of time because I want to like mock them all up and, you know, make an amazing presentation and all that kind of thing. Yeah. So yeah, that is definitely on my radar. I can't pitch for more podcast things now because that's sort of sorted. But I do want to pitch for more work that maybe that I wouldn't normally do. I feel like my bread and butter stuff is ticking over fine. So it's maybe, yeah, projects that I wouldn't do normally.
Okay. So I'd love to hear more if you're willing to share about your different revenue streams. I'm a mm-hmm. huge, huge fan of having multiple revenue streams within the same business.
Yeah.
When I had my kids hip hop dance company, we had seven different revenue streams. And overnight with COVID, we lost six of them. But we were able to still keep going because we had that one revenue stream.
That's incredible. Yeah. Like, that's such a good story, isn't it, for why you should do it, really?
Yeah, because we were teaching in schools, in nurseries, we were delivering birthday parties, so on and so on. And they just all instantly shut down, refund requests, you know, as you would expect. But we were able to take our community classes online. And I'm intentionally doing the same in this business. We have different programs, we have digital courses, obviously different actual agency projects for clients. So I'd love to hear more about how you've intentionally done that as well.
Well, so for a very similar reason, I was actually really fortunate when COVID hit that I think I only lost one client, so I didn't lose much of my client work. But I was very part-time at that point because I'd just come out of like my second maternity leave. But what it made me realize is hearing loads of other designers talk about how all their work had dried up because, you know, businesses are worried. So they're like, oh, we'll put this rebrand on hold or we'll slash our marketing budget, whatever. I was lucky. I wasn't in that situation, but I don't want to be in this situation. So let's see if I can remember all my different revenue streams. The main one, obviously, is branding clients.
Yeah.
Then I have got recently, so the podcast, I would say, isn't really bringing me in money because it costs me money to produce it, but I've started to get sponsors. So technically that's become an income stream. Affiliate marketing has become mm-hmm. a good one for me. So I've recently, it's quite interesting to see which companies resonate, but I've been sharing more companies, you know, all things that are aligned, all things I use, but I'm a bit more intentional about sharing them. And that's actually gone really well.
It's actually quite amazing how quickly that can take off, isn't it? Just sharing the tools that you're using already, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I was surprised. And just putting links strategically, like I think there's a few that are working really hard for me that I didn't even realize, you know, that I'd put in a blog post ages ago. So that's one of them. I did some online courses. So I've got two that are like evergreen, and then I've got one that I run multiple times, once or twice a year, usually. And then sponsorship. So as you mentioned at the beginning, I'm an Adobe Express ambassador. So I've been doing that for a while. So I do sort of like regular promotion for them. So that's an income stream. And then off the back of that, actually, that led to other work with Adobe. So being part of Adobe Live, that was an income stream. And some other opportunities with them. I've like spoken at various events. So speaking has become a small, but hopefully growing revenue stream. So yeah, I think I've covered all of them. So I don't think I'm quite at seven, maybe five or six, I think.
But huge progress since the pandemic.
Absolutely. Where all I had was like client work.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I was actually thinking back on it the other day, and my business, it's so funny, isn't it, how we're all so focused on looking forward about what the next thing is that we just forget to look back. And I was thinking back and I was like, only 3 to 4 years ago, my business looked completely different. Like, it's transformed. And it's amazing how quickly things can change and how it, you know, like a few things that happen can set you off in a different direction and can completely transform your business.
Absolutely. And sometimes you can predict them and sometimes you really can't.
Well, like the Adobe one, for example, I could never have predicted. Like that wasn't something that I was pursuing or working towards. I didn't realize this, but someone from the marketing team at Adobe was following me and I was talking about sponsorship for my podcast. And he was like, oh, send me over the information. And actually, this is a rejection in itself because he never got back to, well, he was very nice about it. And he was like, oh yeah, I'll get back to you. And then he didn't get back to me. So I was like, that's fine. I wasn't expecting anything to happen with that. But unbeknownst to me, he'd recommended me to his colleague and was like, she would be great for the ambassador program, you know, get her on board. And then next thing I know, I'm doing that. And it's been one of the best things that's happened to my business.
So obviously we've talked about putting ourselves out there and getting over our fear of rejection. Why do you think that that is so important as a business owner?
Because it's going to happen and it happens to everybody. And I think the thing is that I don't know if you do this, but what I tend to do is think, well, this is only happening to me. You know, is everything's going perfectly in everybody else's businesses? Because often, you know, we share the highlight reels online. You know, there are some people that will share more vulnerable behind the scenes, but we still tell ourselves these stories, don't we? We're like, oh, I'm the only person going through this. And actually, every single person is going to have experienced rejection and failure in their business. And that's part of the process. And I just think, if we accept and acknowledge that it's part of the process, then it's just less scary. And it doesn't have to be this thing that stops us or slows us down or gets in our way. I mean, we're all starting from different places. That is one caveat that I should get. Like some people, you know, rejection sensitivity disorder is totally a thing. You know, we're not all starting from the same place, but I think we can all make moves in the right direction. And yeah, I just think accepting it as part of the process and being like, oh yeah, that sucked, but you know, this is what I should expect as a business owner, that I'm not going to be for everybody, maybe this isn't the right time, and just not letting it mean something that it doesn't. You know, it could just be that the email's gone into a spam folder, that it's not that they didn't love what you were doing. Again, a reason why the follow-up's so important, because it could be in a spam folder. So
yes.
But yeah, I just think that's why it's important, because it's something that we all have to go through as business owners.
And so would you say that that was one of your goals with this challenge for yourself, was to learn how to handle rejection better so that it didn't slow you down?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, because I think it's really interesting. When I was working for someone else, I wasn't very ambitious at all.
Oh. But,
and then when I set up my own business, I've become like really ambitious, and I have all these like dreams and goals and stuff that I want to achieve. And I'm definitely all for, you know, everyone's on their own journey. I feel like my journey is a lot slower than most people that I see online, and I'm coming to terms with that. I think part of it was I really struggled having kids and on my maternity leave, because I felt like I was getting left behind and everybody else was moving forward. I'm not super worried about like the speed that I do it, but I also just like really enjoy the challenge and the, yeah, like, you know, what am I going to work on next? You know, what's my next goal? That kind of thing. And I think it fits in really well with that.
Were you surprised at the level of interest in this challenge?
Yeah, I was. I could have done a lot more with sharing about it on social media. But yeah, I could have done more, but I shared quite a bit about it on TikTok and had lots of comments from people. Lots of people saying, thanks, I'm going to do this too. A lot of people saying, I'm going to do this, but I'm going to do like 20 rejections. And I was like, yeah, that's much more realistic. I should have done that.
Good plan.
But, you know, I've got my whole life to collect rejections, so it's all fine. Yeah, I was surprised. And just, you know, people, I'm like speaking about it at a conference next week. People have wanted to chat about it on the podcast. I think it just gives more interesting things to talk about, because I have been on lots of podcasts to talk about branding and I love talking about branding. But I think sometimes we, like, people just want to talk about something a bit more human and a bit more like gritty than just what's the latest branding advice and what's the latest marketing advice. Don't get me wrong, I mean, I would listen to those podcasts all day long, but also sometimes it's nice to just hear something a bit different and a bit more relatable, maybe, because it's something that's like universal to all of us.
Yeah, absolutely. I was chatting just before we came on to John, who's my husband, business partner, and podcast editor. And he was saying, what are you talking about today? And I said, Liz is trying to get to 100 rejections. He was like, really? Is that what you're talking about today? I'm like, okay. It's like, this is going to be cool. It's really different. That's what I love. I love to try and find different messages, different ways to talk about your business. It's a perfect way to talk about your business, how it's evolving, how you're growing it. And also, like you say, pique people's interest, because you're not just giving out the same old advice, which, not that you give out old advice, but, you know, we're commonly expecting to hear advice from people, aren't we, on podcasts? Whereas this, I feel like it's a really interesting, different challenge that you've set yourself, and therefore it's of interest to more people.
Yeah, I didn't actually start it for this, but one of the things that I've realized is that we can create things like this in our business for PR opportunities. One of the people that pitched to me to be on the podcast, who I said yes to, was Rosie from PR Dispatch. I don't know if you've come across her.
Oh, yeah.
But she is really good at taking, she'll have phases where she'll take a particular topic, and it's usually something really personal about what's going on in her business. And then she'll pitch that. And then after a while, she'll find a different angle and she'll pitch that. And it's not, oh, let me come on your podcast and talk about PR tips. It's like a real human life angle. But then obviously the PR tips, you know, will come in a bit as well. And it's just an opportunity for her to talk about her business. And so I think that's what's been really nice about this, is it's given me something else to talk about that's linked to my business, is like an interesting human, like, interest sort of story. And what it's made me realize that I want to do going forward is other things like this, you know, like, what challenges can I set myself that will be interesting to chat to people about, and will build community and create connections, and just give other, like, people a different way to find out about me than, oh, hey, I'm doing this workshop about how you should brand your business.
Yeah, exactly. You're using it as a really smart way to grow your personal brand without actually trying to sell yourself to people.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so you are an expert in branding, and this is the Audience Growth Podcast. So listeners love to hear tips about how to cut through and stand out, particularly on social media. So I'd love to hear some advice that you could share when it comes to visual branding for social media. What are some of the things that you see people maybe do wrong? What are some of the things that you're kind of itching to improve things on people's profiles and grid? What can you share today?
Oh, this is a great question. Okay, well, I've got lots of things. I'll try not to get carried away. I think one of my top tips would be to learn some basic principles of design. Like, you don't have to be a designer to make really good standout, like, quality social media graphics. But there are some mistakes that people make that just make it harder for people to consume your content. And it's like design fundamentals, right? The basics. One of the ones that always catches people out, I think, is centering large amounts of text. And I get why people do it, because it looks balanced. Visually, it looks nicer, but it's actually harder for people to read. And I used to get this email and the whole thing was center aligned. And I realized one day that I just wasn't reading it because it was too much work for my brain to find where the next line starts. It's fine for, like, headings or quotes or stuff like that. But if you've got large amounts of text, don't center align it. Think about color contrast. You know, like, you want to make your content as accessible as possible. Like, can people actually read the text? You know, like, don't, this is like an extreme example, but don't put yellow text on a white background, you know, that kind of thing. There's loads of tools that you can use online, like adobe.color, or there's like coolers.co. You can, like, put in your hex codes and it'll tell you how accessible they are, you know, the contrast and everything. Be careful about what font you use. Make sure that it's something that's actually legible. So actually, a lot of it is things that you do that stop people from actually reading your content. And they probably want to read it, but if you make it too hard for them. So that's one of my tips. I think another thing is just, I actually was recording a talk about this morning. It's like, how do you stand out when, you know, everyone's online selling their stuff? And I think one of the temptations can be to see what everybody else is doing and do the same. And that's definitely something that I struggle with. I'm like, oh, well, everyone's doing it this way, so I should probably just do it this way. One of my tips for this would be to actually look at an industry that's completely different from yours and see how they're doing it. and then see if there's anything that you can take over and apply, because it probably will be the case that other people in your industry aren't doing it that way. So you can then bring quite a unique spin on it. But also just really think about how you can get your personality across, because as we were talking about, like, the human interest aspect of brands is what's really, like, good. You know, like, it draws people in. People love that sort of thing. So, you know, what are some, like, unique things about you? I mean, obviously, we're all unique, but also, it's not like you have to come up with something that's, like, totally crazy unusual. But just, yeah, like, some of the things that you think aren't that interesting about yourself, people actually do find interesting. So I think it's just being observant, see what piques people's interest. What do they ask you about? What could you share a bit more of? And obviously, that you've always got to be things that you're comfortable with. And then the other thing, not go off too long, but my other tip would be, in terms of, like, your visual branding, is to keep things consistent. So if you think about when you're scrolling through Instagram, for example, we are being, like, bombarded with visual information really, really fast. We make split second decisions about whether something is relevant to us or not. The first thing we notice is sort of color and shape. You know, before we look at, like, a logo or the text or anything, we're going to notice those things. And so if you can do something that means that people recognize your brand in seconds, then they're going to remember, oh, okay, this is Nikki. Yeah, her content's really helpful to me. I'm going to make sure I slow down and I read this post because I've seen, you know, like, that particular purple that you use, you know. So I think just using your branding consistently is really important. I feel like the word consistently freaks everybody out. And it doesn't mean that you have to do the same post every time. And it doesn't mean that you have to post every day. You know, that isn't what it means. But it's just so that basically those visual clues are there so that people can recognize your brand as quickly as possible.
Yeah, exactly. I was chuckling to myself when you said at the beginning there about not making yourself look like everybody else in your industry and trying to do things differently instead. Because when I first set up my marketing company, it had a different name and it had a completely different color palette, fonts, everything. It was very, like, female business coachy. So I'm sure that just by saying that, you can imagine what it was like. It was dusky pink. It was gold. Oh, yeah. It was kind of swirly handwritten font. And then I just woke up one day and was like, what the hell are you doing? You're literally going out of your way to look like everybody else. And it was a confidence thing. Mm-hmm. Although I'd been a business owner for 5 years by that point, it was my new business in a new industry where I was trying to carve out a niche for myself. And I didn't have the confidence to really stand out and do things differently until I was about 18 months. And even then I took it to my mastermind group at the time that I was in and said, I'm thinking of rebranding as my name. I'm thinking of using really vibrant, blocky colors and fonts. What do you think? And they were all like, yes, what have you been waiting for? So I do think it's a confidence thing.
Yeah, I really love it. And I think you use it so well. Like, I really enjoy when I see your posts and they all look really cohesive. And I think that's it. But you know what? Again, I think that's just part of the journey. You know, like, I think often we just think in such an absolute way about everything. So it's like, oh, okay, well, this is my branding. So this just has to be my branding now. And instead, like, your branding, or your visual branding, I should say, is like a tool. It's a tool to help you achieve your goals and to help you attract the right people. And if it's not working for you in its current format, then it's absolutely right to think about changing it, because there's no point in keeping it if it's not serving you in the way that it needs to. But I think sometimes we just get absolutely terrified that we can never change. I mean, you can go too far the other way, right? Don't change it all the time. That's dire as well.
Yeah.
But, like, our businesses are not like we've set it up and that's done. This is what it is forever. Like, they can evolve with us. And I think that is the beauty of having a more personal brand, which it sounds like you've sort of turned yours into, you know, it's more about you and your personality, is that it can grow with you as a person. It's not you as a person, so it doesn't have to grow in the same way or at the same time, but it can change as your business grows and changes.
Yeah. absolutely. Just like neatly bringing it all back in, just like your challenge is growing and changing as your business does.
Yeah, totally. And it'll probably look different. You know, the sort of things that I'm pitching for in like 3 years' time will probably look totally different to the sort of things as, again, and I think it's what you, like what you mentioned, as my confidence increases, as my, you know, audience increases, you know, like different opportunities come different stages. And yeah, I think that's it.
I'm looking forward to chatting with you in 3 years' time, and you'll say to me, remember that guy who didn't want to come on my podcast because it wasn't big enough? I followed up again and he's coming on.
I know. Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's the plan.
Love it. Liz, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today and sharing a bit about your story and your incredible mission for rejection.
Thanks so much for having me. I love chatting about it.
So where is the best place for people to connect with you online?
Definitely Instagram. So I'm at Liz M. Mosley on Instagram, definitely where I hang out the most. I'm also on TikTok. That's probably like my second platform. And yeah, my website, lizmosley.net. And definitely check out my podcast, which is Building Your Brand.
Yes.
And yeah, thanks.
Fabulous. Thank you so much. I hope you enjoyed today's episode with Liz. I'll be back next week, this time with a solo episode, and I'd love to see you back here then. Remember to grab your personalized marketing powerhouse report before then by taking our short quiz at www.nikkihutchison.com/quiz. Have a great week, and I'll see you next Friday. Until then, take care and keep marketing.